KBPS on PRP, student radio for the city of Portland. Joe Anderson here, your host. Thanks for tuning in. Join me as we hear from students across the Portland Public School District, powered by AM 1450 KBPS Portland. For 100 years, KBPS has been the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Brought to you by Portland Radio Project, KPRP LP Portland, your nonprofit community radio station. This is KBPS on PRP.
I'm Vicki Winters, and this is part of an ongoing series where I interview teachers and staff around Benson. Today, I'm interviewing Brewer, a teacher here at Benson.
I'm here with Miss Brewer. She is one of the AP Lang teachers. I'm not sure, what else do you teach, Miss Brewer?
I also teach ninth grading.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've been teaching, this is my 10th year at Benson. This is my 17th year teaching overall. I have spent most of those years as an English teacher. I spent 2 years as a middle school special ed teacher. I am originally from Oregon, but I lived in Boston for 10 years, which was where I started my teaching career. So I taught for the first 5 years in the Boston Public Schools. But Benson has been my longest tenure and probably the place that I have felt the most at home as a teacher.
Why is it, do you think you've spent so long here at Benson?
I've been fortunate to work with a lot of other really rad staff, people who are just really interesting, really smart, really hardworking people who are doing cool things that inspire me. Not necessarily English teachers, but in the CTE realm as well. So just getting to see and know that kids are doing things so much bigger and more diverse than just what happens in an English classroom. So I love that element. And I think obviously, like, I love the students that I've been really fortunate to teach at Benson as well. I feel like in my time here, I have been able to teach so many different students who come from so many different experiences and who offer me so many important lessons that you might not have in a more homogeneous school in certain places. So I'm just really grateful for all the diversity and in thought and experience that happens here at Benson.
So you mentioned you grew up here in Oregon. What made you decide to be a teacher, and why did you eventually move to Boston?
I was pretty sure I was going to be a teacher from the time I was probably in like fourth or fifth grade. My mom was a teacher. I have aunts and uncles who are teachers, cousins who are teachers and administrators. And so I think that it just is kind of ingrained in me and what I always just thought I was gonna do. And I was really fortunate to have a lot of really positive school experiences. And so I think that when I was starting to think about what I wanted as a career, I saw those positive and like fulfilling experiences that I had as a student, and I wanted to be able to offer and give those to other people. I thought I wanted to be an elementary school teacher, and then I spent like 6 months teaching fourth grade when I was in college, and that solidified that I definitely didn't want to be an elementary school teacher. Little kids are cute, they're fun, but it was just a little more than I could handle. And then I moved to Boston to go to college. And then the school I went to had a combined bachelor's and master's program, so I knew that I could graduate in 5 years with both my degrees, and it helped improve my chances for getting a job. And I actually got a job at the school where I student taught. And so I ended up actually spending almost 6 years at that, 7 years at that school when all was said and done. So, yeah.
Growing up in Oregon, did you have an idea of what Benson was? Are you a Benson alum?
I'm not a Benson alum. I did know about Benson, but I grew up down in Eugene, and I actually really only knew about Benson for like athletic reasons, because they had a really, really good track and field team, and a bunch of my friends were track and field athletes, and so I feel like we always saw or heard about them at like the state track meet. And so really, that was like the big connection that I had to Benson. I didn't really know much about Benson until I moved back to Portland in 2010.
Hi, this is Vicki Winters back from the studio, and I just wanted to make a small comment on what Brewer just said there about Benson's track and field team. Our track and field team is still pretty good, but right now Benson is pushing forward in sports in different ways. Our basketball teams, both girls and boys, have some excellent players on them, and that looks to be something that's going to continue to be true into the future. So if you're looking for an excellent sports team, especially in basketball, Benson's kind of the place to be. And we have a long history of excellent basketball players, track runners, etc., etc. Anyway, back to the interview. What made you come back to Portland?
Family. I had been gone for 10 years, and it was just time for a change. And I missed the Northwest more than anything, and so I just missed the access to mountains and oceans, and my parents were here, or are here, and aunts and uncles and cousins, and so it was just time to come back. Yeah.
How did you come to teach at Benson?
Desperation? No, I'm just kidding. You can edit that out. I'm kidding.
Oh my God, are we that bad?
No. It's I had spent 2 years as a middle school special ed teacher, and so those, when I moved here in 2011, I guess it was actually, there was major layoffs that were happening, and English teachers were like not high on the priority list. There was too many of us. And so because of my dual licensure, I had that special ed job, but I knew that I wanted to be in a high school, and I knew I wanted to be back in a general classroom. And so I really just started applying to PPS high schools that had English teacher positions available. And I knew I wanted to be in Portland Public Schools, and I actually was really drawn to Benson. And the same year I got the job at Benson, I also had applied for a job at Roosevelt at De La Salle North. I had applied to because I just was ready to be back in an English classroom. And so I had an offer from Benson and Roosevelt, and I kind of had to decide. And there was, you know, a couple factors that went into it. A lot of it had to do with the fact that Benson was a lot like the school I taught at in Boston, in that the school I taught at in Boston was a health careers pathway for students. And so a lot of kids were getting jobs and internships and doing work at the myriad of kind of health outlets that existed in Boston. And so I saw a lot of parallels between like the CT programs and like what was happening at Benson and what was happening at the school I taught at in Boston. And so I was drawn to that. And so Benson was kind of a no-brainer. When I got the offer there, it didn't take me long to make that decision.
So something we haven't talked about yet, but there's a recent change that's been happening, the academy system. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the academy system?
It's really complicated because I think that in theory, what it has the opportunity to do is really powerful. But it also requires a lot of resources, and it also requires a shift in thinking on behalf of staff, students, families, partnerships outside of the school. And that kind of stuff takes time to cultivate. And so I love the idea of the interconnectedness between disciplines. And I think that there's a lot that's to that. But you know, again, like it's a hard change, and it's a shift from like what has kind of quote unquote traditionally been done. And so I'd love to see it happen, and I love to see something like that implemented with fidelity. But again, I think that it takes patience and a willingness to do the work. And I think people like what it sounds like in theory, but don't want to put in the time and the energy to make that happen. And so I hope that we can kind of shift that, because again, I think that like allowing, you know, students to kind of focus is really good. The other thing that is hard and challenging about it is, you know, one cool thing about Benson in the past has been like the exposure to kind of a little bit of everything. And, you know, kids could take all, you know, in 9th and 10th grade, traditionally students took all different CTE classes, and so they experience kind of a smattering of that. And so I think asking kids to commit to something in 10th grade is a little bit of a downside, like really to kind of put them in that path. But I think that the gains and the opportunities are a lot richer, and so I think that that is a positive, you know, trade-off that could happen.
Do you have any clubs or extracurriculars that you interact with?
I do. I'm the advisor for National Honor Society, and so I work with our like student leaders to organize monthly meetings and help to kind of keep that on board and keep our chapter of National Honor Society afloat. And then I have other kind of like professional things that I do in addition to just like student facing stuff. So, yeah.
All right. I think that's. Okay. Oh, actually, let's round out with just one thing that you love about Benson.
Oh man, there's lots of things I love about Benson. I think the one thing that I love about Benson is that. It really is actually almost true of just teaching in general that no 2 days are ever the same. And so my job is never boring. Like, I get to come to work with a plan every day and an idea of what it might hold, but I have no idea what may happen. And I think that I really love just like getting to see kids come in as ninth graders and leave as 12th graders as just like completely transformed and different kids. And a lot of that is just because of the culture that we cultivate here. So I think that that's probably what I was coming to mind about what I love the most, at least today.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was Ms. Brewer, a teacher here at Benson. I hope you enjoyed the interview. I'll see you next time on PRP.
Greetings. I'm Joe in the KBPS studio presenting the KBPS playlist, where a different student each week shares some music they're listening to right now. The first song is Race with the Devil by Girl School. That was Race with the Devil by Girl School. Next up, Midnight Man by Flash in the Pan.
Thank you.
That was Midnight Man by Flash in the Pan. Our last song for today is The Look by Roxette.
Like a raindrop, she's got the look. Heavenly bomb, cause heaven's got a number when she's spinning me around. Kissing is a color, a loving is a wild dog. She's got the look. She's got the look.
She's got the look.
She's got the look.
She's got the look.
What in the world can make a brown eyed girl turn blue? When everything I'll ever do, I do for you. A lover's disguise, banging on the head drum, shaking like a mad bull. She's got the
the love.
The Look by Roxette. Thank you for listening to the KBPS playlist, and thank you for listening to KBPS on PRP.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart.
Bring on the party, turn me on, and get to know me like what you see. Yeah, I'll set you free.
Good afternoon, KBPS. My name is Zip, and thank you for listening to KBPS on PRP. Today, I'm with my classmate, Colby. How's it going, Colby?
Good. I'm tired.
No, that's fair. I mean, it's a Monday morning when we're recording this. Mondays honestly do suck, but I normally review a song every week that came out by an artist recently, but this week I thought I'd change it up a little bit, and we're just going to talk about what we like about music. My main thing is that I really like lyrics. Like, of course, the instruments in the songs are very good, but my favorite thing to do is find a song that I like and, like, read the lyrics and see what the story is behind it.
Like, Kendrick Lamar's new album. I love that album. I'm not a huge Kendrick Lamar fan, but that album was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And then I also listened to Yeat, who, if you've heard his music before, there are lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't make any sense. Like, you don't really hear them.
Yeah, I mean, one of the albums that I like best for its storytelling through its lyrics is 7 Years Old by Lucas Graham. Its most famous song is 7 Years, yeah, which is what everybody else knows. But the rest of the songs are detailing a bunch of moments in his life, everywhere from him as a child to his funeral, what he imagined his funeral would be like, his brother going to jail, and his family without a dad, and a bunch of other stuff like that. And each one tells a very interesting story.
I didn't even know that was an album. I just thought it was, like, a single song.
Yeah, now a lot of people think that Lucas Graham is a one-hit wonder, but actually he has, like, 3 or 4 other popular songs, but only 7 years in that one album.
What was it? I think Lucas Graham, I think it was him, he was telling a story how, like, he went to a store and nobody recognized him, and that's when he realized, like, oh, wow, I really need to put some more stuff out. Just nobody knew who he was.
Where'd you see that? Was that on, like, an interview or something?
I think so. It's been probably around a year since I watched it, but I just kind of remember, I think it was him just saying, like, yeah, I had, like, some store just shopping, and no one even walked up to me. He's like, that's kind of when I realized, like, hey, I really need to, like, start putting this out with some more music.
Yeah, do you know if that was before or after 7 years?
I think it was after.
after.
Yeah, okay. I think I'm pretty sure it was after 7 years.
Yeah, because I remember in one of the songs on there, he talks about how he got featured. It was some segment on like one of the really big news stations, and then his mom called him and was like, "Hey, did you know that they put you on here?" And he's like, "No, I didn't know that." And then he's like, "Oh, I'm actually popular. There are people who want to go to my upcoming concert now."
That's something I've always kind of found interesting is like there are so many artists out there. They just put out a song, don't expect much, and then one day just huge.
Oh, yeah.
One artist, he put out a song on SoundCloud, Gosha. It was fine, just, you know, a few steady streams, and then one day just blew up. Same with Juice WRLD.
His song
Lucid Dreams, he put out on SoundCloud, and that was just like a normal SoundCloud song, whatever. Got a few thousand streams. Nothing serious, and then it just popped off one day.
I have always been fascinated with one-hit wonders. Actually, here's one by the Gym Class Heroes. Yeah, here it is, Stereo Hearts. This one was...
I love that song.
It's so good. It came out in 2011. It's Pop by Gym Class Heroes.
I remember the first time I heard that song. Tennessee, I was going to get my favorite chow mein, and I heard this song. It was playing on a TV up in the food court. I'm like... This song slaps. Wow, this is a great song.
For me, most of the time I heard it on the radio. When I was in middle school, it was a after-school childcare thing called Hand in Hand, where they would be playing radio all the time, and me and a lot of the other people would listen to Bruno Mars. There was a lot of Maroon 5 and other stuff like that. And this song came up, and I remember I liked listening to that a lot. It's in the Papercut Chronicles 2 album, if anybody wants to listen in. But yeah, that was all the way back in 2011. Actually, here's something that I find interesting. There's a song called Stolen Dance by Milky Chance, which I seem to recognize. I thought it was played on a lot of radio stations, but nobody recognized it when I played for them. It's 2013 Stolen Dance in Sadinessary by Milky Chance.
Most one-hit wonder they put out is like Someone I Used to Know.
Someone I Used to Know, yeah.
Is that the name of the song? Yeah, I mean, the guy, he kind of just like showed up, put out an absolute amazing song, and then just dipped. You don't hear from him, you don't see him, nothing.
I have seen a couple of posts online just like, yo, everybody remember this song? It was such a banger, and then all of a sudden it just disappeared.
Yeah, like, did that dude die? Like, what happened to him?
Gotay or Goatee, I believe, in the album Mirror Making, released on...
Wait, it was an album?
Someone I Used to Know by Gotay.
Man, that song was wild.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually going to save it right now.
Yeah, like, I remember my dad, as young, he invited me, and he's like, hey, come check this video out. I'm like, all right. And as I'm watching, I'm like, oh, wow, this song's awesome. I don't know how that guy fell off. Like, he could have put some good stuff
out.
Yeah,
no, he's actually released music before and after it. Somebody That I Used to Know was made in 2011.
Wow.
And, yeah, he has an album out in 2009. And then he's also made another one in 2013.
Is that his most recent?
His most recent. 2013. It's Like Drawing Blood.
Wow, so nothing since 2013.
Yeah, no, I don't...
Let me double check with Spotify.
I don't know where he is. He looks like, honestly, a... No offense to him, of course, kind of a basic dude.
Yeah, he looks just kind of normal.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, his song was really good. I remember when I saw the music video, it like had a lot of like pastel colors, and it had
stained glass windows?
Stained glass, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember the music video had art that looked like that, and he was covered in body paint and stuff like that.
Yeah, so his last song was called Ghosts in 2013, and he was a feature artist. It's 3 minutes and 41 seconds. Yeah, February 12th, 2013 was the last song that he was ever on. That's wild.
Here's an artist that a lot of people kind of know, which he's a bit underrated, Jason Mraz. Have you heard of him?
Sounds really, really familiar.
Yeah, his most popular song, I believe, is I'm Yours. Yeah, in 2008, all the way back there.
No, like, that's actually the thing about music with me is, like, recently I've been trying to kind of go back and experience some of the older music that I kind of, like, hated when I was younger.
No, I actually completely agree. But I have a playlist with around 130 songs of all songs that are specifically from 2011 to 2018. A lot of 2016 music in there. And it was all of the pop that you would always hear on the radio station. But I personally never liked doing whatever's viral, and that included back then. But now that I'm re-listening to it, I'm like, I remember sitting in the car, going to, like, Subway, just listening to these songs back in the day.
No, I remember going to Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Like, I hated her when I was younger. Is she really like that then and now? Yeah. It's like, if I don't go to a Lady Gaga concert before I die, I have not lived a complete life. Like, I will die defending how amazing she is.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And it's like, I hated her songs. Like, I remember it was Applause. It came on. I think I was going home and I told my mom, change the radio station. I hate this song. And yeah. Now that's like one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, I got two things to say about that. One, here's a name that a lot of people are probably going to cringe at. Justin Bieber.
You.
Everybody doesn't like him. But if you play a single one of his songs, you can't help but sing along. Everybody knows all of the words to the songs.
Honestly, I don't hate him. He's just kind of like a weird guy. Like his new song, Yummy.
Yummy.
If you listen to it, you know what it's about. But he was like posting like pictures of babies doing like hashtag yummy. And yummy, the song should have nothing to do. Like, it should not be associated with pictures of babies because it's not exactly the best. When like, if you actually like just read the lyrics, like, okay, this is why are there babies surrounding this song now? Or like, he's like, yeah, hey, if you're a fan of mine, just put this on repeat all the time. I want to get the number one.
Yeah, dude, anybody who asks them, hey, take me to number one, is probably not a person deserving of it.
It's like, dude, you're Justin Bieber. Your song's going to be at least top five. I think he would go in like Omegle or something.
He did Omegle, really?
I think so. I don't know. Or something. He would somehow get in contact with his fans. I remember I saw the video. He's like talking with this one fan. She was crying, so excited that he's like, hey, did you buy my album yet? Hey, did you buy my album? Hey, hey, did you buy my song? Hey, you should buy my song. My song's really, really good. Like, you should buy my song. I'm like, Justin Bieber, man. Like, everybody knows you. Yeah, your song's going to blow up.
Here's another song that a lot of people might recognize. Some Nights by Fun. It was the end credit song to Wreck-It Ralph back in 2012.
Oh, I forgot about that movie.
It's a pretty good movie. I mean, I enjoy it. But the thing about Fun is that my parents were actually playing Fun for me before the movie came out, when the song actually got popular. So a lot of the songs, when I revisited the album looking for the song, I was like, wait, I recognize all these. My parents used to play this for me.
I always love when that happens.
Yeah.
Like, just like sitting there, like you'll be listening to a song, like you'll be watching a movie, playing a game, whatever, and like, hey, wait, I know this song.
Yeah.
Like, I listen to this song all the time, or I can't remember what the song was, but I think it was like The Last of Us. I was replaying it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the song, I'm like, hey, hey, I love this song.
Yeah.
And like, it kind of ruined the moment for me because I loved that song. I was more focused on the song than the game. I'm like, I love this song. This song's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that happened to me with actually Plain White Tees, who made Hey There Delilah, which is a little bit of a memed on song, but I still think it's pretty good. My parents played that music for me a lot when I was younger, and I was just shuffling through Pandora, you know, the good old music app back in, this was probably like 2010, 2012, and Plain White Tees came up. I just thought that I really liked it. I did not know that I actually used to listen to this as a baby. Another one of those for me is Michael Franti's Say Hey, I Love You. It's a reggae song made in 2008 as well. My parents played a lot for me when I was younger. I didn't really rediscover it, but I've always listened to it. It's not very popular at all. Michael Franti isn't super out there. He's a bit in the hippie community, but not too much.
My parents never like really played any small songs for me. It's always been like Michael Jackson, you know, like just like the big, big names.
But mm-hmm.
It's probably like 3-4 years ago. I was with this one artist, Marcus Charles. He's like rap hip hop.
Marcus Charles.
But he is really, really good. Like, he has 204 monthly listeners last time I checked, which I believe was like 3 weeks ago. But he is actually he's putting out a new album here pretty soon. He released a new song called How to Be Human. Really, really good. It's like,
yeah, I'm looking at the single right here.
Yeah, it's like, I think around 3 minutes long. Did a really good job putting that out. Like, he may be small, but the effort he puts into his music and the quality is very, very good. Like, you can feel the passion for his music. I remember I was driving somewhere and it was a rainy day. I listened to Sirius XM. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they were interviewing him. He did a freestyle. And man, his freestyle was awesome.
Ooh.
As soon as he was done, I'm like, who is this guy? I get on a Spotify and I listen to every single one of his songs. I love his music.
I personally don't listen to too much rap myself, but I do listen to a couple names like Aminé, Macklemore. Well, thanks for coming in, Colby.
Yeah, no problem, man. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. And as always, thank you all so much for listening to KBPS. My name is Zip, and my friend here is Colby. Yeah, Colby. And we will see you next time. Thanks so much for listening.
Yeah, have a good day.
PRP listeners, this is James and Josiah with the KBPS One Hour Show. Today we're going to be talking about the Velocity Copter. It's this new transportation thing that they're trying to do. Like, it was made by a German engineer, and he's trying to revolutionize travel, because he says that air travel will be more used in the future than, well, it is now.
It's more specifically that he's trying to revolutionize urban travel, which is to say, like, in towns and stuff, or, like, getting from your town to your business. And so the idea is they're going to have, like, a kind of a drone helicopter, which isn't built – it's not flying because of gas. It's flying because of electricity.
And 28 motors.
Or yes. Motors, I mean. 18, not 28.
Oh, 18.
Yeah. So they have 9 engines and I believe 18 motors, which is like a lot. But it's a small vehicle. It's all decently quiet, apparently. It's 4 times quieter than a helicopter.
A small helicopter.
Yes. And they have flown it over Dubai and a bunch of... What were the other cities it flew over? I think it was New York as well.
I forgot.
I know that they flew around in Germany, Dubai, and I believe a big town in America, like a big city.
They say they're not really ready yet for to implement it throughout the world, but they're going to be trying, and this could probably be the steps we need to revolutionize travel and make it one step closer to the future.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's been, I know that they did a bunch of... What did they do? Sorry, I'm trying to remember because I'm not a good rememberer. They were since
2011 and they've done over 1,000 test flights. Only recently in 2021 were they actually given their license to do this stuff
in Asia as well, which makes sense. So in Asia India. So they've been flying around in India a little bit and in Germany, I believe, also a little bit. And they had to make it fly for at least an hour. We actually looked up how long a helicopter can fly for.
Well, how long one of these can fly?
Not one of these, but how long a electric helicopter can fly without... Batteries that are rechargeable, they can fly for 15 minutes if they have 2. And then these ones have 9 batteries that are rechargeable. So I would say assume it's about an hour of fly material. So that means it's just on the bar for commercial use. Of course, they're not applying to the public yet, but they will be at some point in the future, which means... And they're also planning on... revolutionizing batteries, like making them better, making them work better, and generally just making batteries better quality so that way they can fly for longer and hold more power.
Honestly, we're just here to give you our personal opinions on this. And my opinion is that this sounds cool, but it'll probably end bad.
Bad how?
Well, like, imagine just... If the pilot just forgot to charge it, or if your commute was just a little bit too long.
I mean, okay, that air travel is very fast. It's very quick, and this isn't supposed to be something like a. It's not supposed to be travel across an entire country. It's just supposed to be traveling from like town to town, right, or from your house to your business. So assuming they can get enough areas set up to recharge it, or maybe if they made it recharge through solar energy and have that be reliable somehow, then it could be viable for, like, big town and city moving around.
Well, probably not, because with solar energy, it'll take more solar panels than than you would have on a house to power up an electric car and charge it, which is probably why it'll probably take... Well, we have to get much more advanced in solar panels to actually be able to do something like that.
Solar panels have already surpassed oil and coal in producing energy.
Well, yes, but like with the amount of solar panels it would take to charge your car, it wouldn't be efficient to put that on put it on a car. And I don't think a much smaller drone copter would be, you know, easier to put solar panels on.
Are they smaller than a car? Are they? I mean, they can hold like two people.
Well, it can hold like one.
It can hold two. I know that I saw a picture somewhere of two people sitting in it.
Well, it was meant for one person.
Okay, so it's more like privatized business then.
Also, apparently someone else, not even in there, will be piloting it. And
right, because, yeah, okay, yeah.
Also, just if your pilot's having a bad day, that's bad for you.
Not necessarily. I guess it depends on the situation, you know. But like, it's going to be flown from an outside perspective because it's a drone helicopter. So the people can access, like, the AI. So if one gets hacked, it can be a problem because then they can move you wherever they want or other problems could ensue. We're not going to mention those.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a few problems, but there's a lot of upsides, such as being able to move quicker, get to your business faster, and assuming
not
modernization.
Not having to deal with traffic.
Yeah, and not having to deal with traffic. And assuming that this gets modernized, you wouldn't have to deal with the one person being able to sit in one, because assuming this goes commercial and it's actually really huge and makes a big investment, and people actually like buy these things, then they'll be able to modernize it. They can make it bigger or smaller or use more or less energy.
They're not trying to replace other modes of transportation. They're just trying to add new options.
Yeah, they're trying to make this one be commercially and accessibly viable. I hope that in the future they make it easier for people themselves to drive one and not have somebody else pilot it, which that would still that would be even great. That could be greater because you would have a lot of people who could then get businesses going.
Also, in the future, when this can take up less energy and also has more power to use, we could actually even probably use this to replace helicopters, which are one of the biggest polluters in the world.
Yeah, helicopters cause a massive amount of pollution, which I feel like a lot of people don't know. It's a pretty big deal.
But another thing about these is just that it feels like one of those things where, like, testing it early probably gives you a high chance of dying, but it's one of those things. It's not something like Jurassic Park or Jurassic World where even if there is a high chance of dying, you'd still go anyway because, you know, dinosaurs are cool stuff. But, like, fear of heights, that's a big issue.
To be fair, I would still give them some form of credit. It has been flown over 1,000 times, like over 1,000 test flights. I don't know how many of those were successful, though. They don't really mention that. They also don't mention how long these things can actually fly for. So we had to do our own investigation, and that's even a little bit like maybe they can fly for an hour. It's probably more expected.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. It's probably more expected to be like 57, 58 minutes, which is still good, but could be better.
But, like, this will definitely improve a lot of things in life. Like, you won't even have to sit next to annoying people on the bus or weird people. You'll just be in the air.
Well, is this going to be, like, a bus service?
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, right, because it's a taxi. Right, yeah, we forgot to mention, it's a taxi. Like, it's a taxi service. So you would call a taxi, which I assume would be one of these, however they're going to get a taxi thing set up. And then you would...
I'm assuming you would have to be at one of the starting transit points and then go to a different transit point that might be close to your destination or where you're trying to go.
Yeah. So, it's a taxi. It's a taxi. So, you pay for your flight and then you go. It's like a... Think of it as like a small airplane that can fit one guy or one girl.
A small helicopter, not an airplane. Not an airplane.
Whatever. It's a one-seated flying vessel.
Yep.
Do we have anything more we want to talk about on this?
Not really. Well, this has been James and Josiah for Portland Radio Project. We will see you, you will hear us in a little bit.
How's everyone doing? I'm Oscar B.
I'm Oscar C.
And Ariano live in AM 1450 KBPS.
On February 26th, Damian Lillard scored 71 points. Oscar, 71 points. How do you feel about
71
that?
71 points. He also had 13 threes, and this is a new all-time record for him. His previous record was 61 points, and he beat it out by a three-pointer, and it was just an insane game to watch. I had the fortune of, I was able to get some tickets, called up my friend Oscar. I was like, you want to go? He said, yeah, and I'm happy that we did. It was an amazing game.
I didn't know this was going to happen. I didn't know he would drop 71. You know, it was. I was like, okay, I got nothing to do, right? I got nothing to do. It's a Sunday. Sure, I'll pull up to a game, you know. Why not? Next thing you know, 71 on the Rockets' head, bro.
That's the most hyped I've ever seen any Blazer stadium in a long time. And I've been to a lot of basketball games there. And I think this, just the energy, the crowd, everyone saying it's Dame time, MVP, MVP. Over and over. I think that just pushed Damian Lillard to doing what he did last night.
And dunking on someone's head. Oh, my God. Head tap right here. Head tap. Oh, my God. Yeah. On his head and one. Bro.
Multiple pointers right in their face. Like, it was crazy.
And he's part of the 70 club now.
Yep.
Was it Donovan Mitchell, right? Scored 70. Dame, 70.
Yeah.
What point guard do you know that dropped 70? I only can think about those two.
Yeah, those are the only two that come to my head.
But Damian back-to-back, he dropped a 60, I think, in this season as well.
61. Yeah, that was his all time.
Oh my, dude. Before. No, I think it was just 60.
Yeah.
But I don't know, bro. Just being at that stadium and with a bunch of Blazers and at a home game, too.
Yeah. Feeling the energy there, it was quite an experience. Ariana, to you, what are your thoughts?
Well, as someone who doesn't really watch basketball games, I was kind of interested in watching the Rockets versus the Blazers. But I mean, as I observed on like social media, I can see how hyped everyone was and how Damian Lillard was, too. But I don't know. It was kind of fun watching it.
And here's a little audio of me and Oscar at the game when Dame shot a contested three, step back three on the Rocket. So here it is. And that was it for our PRP. And again, I just want to say Dame's stats right now. He played a total of 39 minutes, 71 points. The field goal was 22 out of 38. He was 13 for 22 for threes, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. And that was it. Thank you. This has been Oscar B.
Oscar C.
And Ariano live in AM 1450 KBPS.
Hello, I'm Paul Schindler, Benson Class of 70, KBPS Chief of Staff for the 69-70 school year. I'm going to tell you what it was like at KBPS in the last years of the 60s, when KBPS was a mere 43 years old. KBPS is the oldest high school radio station in the country. This isn't an authoritative history, but rather a snapshot of my particular time. Ask Jacob Peterson for the URL if you want a luridly detailed history. We'll start with the doctor. Dr. Patricia L. Green Swenson, who ran the station for 46 years, about half its lifetime. The doctor went from being Pat Green to Mrs. Swenson in 1955 when she married Daryl Twink Swenson. Daryl was a KOIN engineer and a former student of the doctor's. Colleagues nicknamed him Twink for Twinkle Toes, in honor of his dancing skill. The doctor earned her Doctor of Education degree from New York University on December 31st, 1959. They say, write what you know. The doctor did. Her thesis was about radio in the Portland public schools, which she had already been running for 12 years by that point. The doctor was a force of nature. She won most battles with the head shed, the school district office, and outlasted numerous superintendents. She was also very formal. One night, the doctor and I were returning from a remote broadcast. We got out of her big red Cadillac with the 1450 vanity plates. You needed a lot of pull to get a vanity plate in 1966. She had a lot of pull. I walked up the stairs to the second floor studio, carrying our 30-pound field tape recorder. You know, the equivalent of any good cell phone today. Anyway, I waited outside the station door for the doctor to unlock it. After a few minutes, I put the gear down and walked back downstairs. Dr. Swenson was still standing outside. She said, "A gentleman opens the door for a lady." Now that's formal. The doctor was formal with her colleagues as well. She insisted that her employees, peers, and superiors address her as Dr. Swenson. When she wasn't in the room, it was Pat, or the doctor. Every important piece of paper produced at KBPS bore the initials PLS in the doctor's distinctive handwriting. Occasionally, but never seriously, and never to her face, we said it stood for Pretty Lousy Supervisor. The staff followed her lead. We too went a little bit initial crazy. What little paperwork we generated was also signed with initials. It worked out well when the doctor appointed me chief of staff. That was a position she filled every year by decree, rewarding the students she thought had the best leadership skills. Thus, I was P.S. the C.S. We also spoke some seemingly unpronounceable initials. Bruce C. Murdoch was B.C.M., and we pronounced it B.C.M. If the doctor was the CEO, her producer was the COO. Producers made sure the station ran tickety-boo. In 65 and 66, there were 2 one-year producers. First was Russ Gorslein, who now runs a recording studio in Portland. Then my freshman year came Jerome J. Thompson, who went on to Texas Christian University. It was tough to work for the doctor. But then starting in 1968, Daryl Konser worked with the doctor for the last 27 years of her tenure, almost half the time she served, and just over one-fourth of the station's history. In 1966, 26 years before the KBPS building, the station had 2 locations in the opposite ends of Benson. On the second floor of the auditorium were the offices, the studio, and the master control booth. There was also a sofa next to the door and 4 desks for the minions. At the far right, as you came in the door, was the only private office, the doctor's. But her door was seldom closed, and you could count on her hearing the quietest comment and steaming out of her office to express a forceful opinion. On the second floor of the old gym building was the KBPS transmitter. During the day, students shuffled back and forth, often with paperwork from the doctor. There was a second control booth at the transmitter from which all after-hours broadcasts were controlled and announced. At night, there was only the student and the engineer, often the chief engineer, Tom Barnett. Few of the students on the night shift brought food, since it was an easy walk to a hamburger joint known as Scotty's, the home of the 49er. In those ancient days, 49 cents would buy you a hamburger, and fries. A shake was extra. The engineer would often flip you 2 quarters to pick one up for him as well. You could often see through the wrapping paper by the time you got back to the station. The best time to go to Scotty's, or the bathroom, was just after starting a half-hour program on tape. About the transmitter. According to Portland radio historian Craig Adams, the transmitter was designed and built by Charles Wiegandt. For decades, it was the only FCC-type-approved hand-built transmitter in the country. Now, how about the 1970 equipment? If you started after the 1992 building, this will sound like the narration for a museum tour. In the second floor studio, just behind the auditorium, the microphones were aged, but still excellent. They were probably at least 10 years old. They were the Cadillac of microphones. The staff believed if you tilted a table-mounted 44 mic, it would make your voice sound lower. The doctor said this would damage the mic's delicate innards, so she forbade the practice, a rule observed any time she was looking. Condenser mics were the BMWs, but we couldn't afford them, so we made do with Cadillacs in the studio, the wonderful-sounding ribbon mics from the 1930s. The RCA 44 was that square microphone you see from pictures in the 30s and 40s. Radio stars posed with them. When presidents were speaking indoors, you could usually see one on the table. You can't use a 44 outside because the wind would break it. The silver, pill-shaped microphone was an RCA 77. Elvis used to sing into one. You've seen it if you ever watched Larry King or David Letterman. They used RCA 77 microphones as props on their desks. Then there were the control booth microphones, the Volkswagen of mics, or for younger alumni, the motorized skateboard of mics. The Shure 635 was so sturdy it could allegedly be used to pound nails, not recommended, and still function. You've seen this dynamic microphone in the hands of television reporters as they mob a politician. It's sort of flashlight-like, with thinner-than-usual barrel topped by what looks like a very small mushroom. It's silver in color. How about tape recorders? KBPS had three kinds of Ampex tape recorders. In the studio, there was a portable with its heads facing up, which made editing easy. The Ampex 402 was the 30-pound portable recorder we used for field recording. Both control rooms, the studio and the transmitter, had dual track-mounted Ampex recorders. On our control boards in 1966, there were no sliders or colored lights. Volume was controlled by round knobs, known as potentiometers, or POTS. Instead of lights, volume was controlled using a VU meter. Be careful not to let it go in the red, otherwise the sound will distort. That's a quick walk through KBPS when it was still a spry station of less than 50. That's my opinion. I'm Paul Schindler.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart. KBPS on PRP, the new student show airing on Portland Radio Project, featuring Benson High School KBPS radio students. On air since 1923, KBPS is the radio station located at Benson High School, staffed by students while they learn about the communications and broadcast industry. Streaming 24/7 at www.kbps.am or 1450 on your AM dial. KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Portland Radio Project is your nonprofit community radio station, closely tuned into Portland. On the dial at 99.1 FM in the heart of Portland and streaming worldwide from any computer at prp.fm. This concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joe Anderson, and this has been an hour with KBPS on PRP.